Mark 6:30, the apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all that they had done and taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going, they didn't even have a chance to eat. So he said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." So they went away by themselves to a boat, to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. And when Jesus landed, he saw a large crowd, and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. In 1960, expert testimony concerning time management was given to a Senate subcommittee. The experts said that because of advances in technology, within 20 years or so, people would be radically cutting back on how many hours a week they worked or how many hours a week they a year they worked, because if they didn't, they would have to retire sooner. The great challenge, according to the experts in the 60s, about people in our day was, what would they do with all of their free time? And I know as we sit here on Labor Day approaching the fall, all of you, that's your biggest concern when you come in here this morning, right? What am I going to do with all my free time? I'm pondering, Pastor, tell me something, fill my free time up. We live in a crazy world. I mean, we have internet shopping, fast food, cell phones that perform multiple functions. On my cell phone, I almost brought it with me, but I didn't want to commit idolatry when I was preaching. So on my cell phone, you can send emails, you can get on the internet. It's my day timer and my phone, all in one deal. We are the most hurried nation, I believe, on the planet. And you don't really get this until you go to other countries. When you go to other countries, you see, that's why it's so good to do cross-cultural mission trips and to visit, because you kind of see, you know, how crazy your culture is. You don't really know you're in water, you know, if you're a fish, because you're in the water all the time. You ask a fish what water is, they're going to say, "What's water?" Because they just know it, they live in it. That's kind of what it's like to be an American until you go outside of this country. I remember doing a mission trip in the Philippines, and people would just like show up 20 minutes late to everything. And it was okay. If you were driving down the road and you saw Uncle Charlie, you would stop your car in the middle of the road and talk to Uncle Charlie. And everybody would just be patient, waiting behind you. Totally different deal. There's a great disconnect between our country and other countries. There's also a disconnect between our century and the first century. When we read the Bible was written in the first century. And it's very easy sometimes to think, okay, we talk about following Christ. How do you do that? I mean, is the way that he lived absolutely unattainable because of the differences in culture? How can we live like Jesus? He didn't have computers. He didn't have cars. He didn't have cell phones. I mean, his life was simple. Ours is so complicated, it's impossible. And it was simple for him, more simple in some ways. But you need to make no mistake about this statement. Jesus was busy. Now, when you read the Bible, it's pretty easy to kind of zone out on what was actually going on, especially in the story we read, if you read the context. But can you imagine if you were Jesus for a second? Some of us may think we are. I want to give you news, you're not. But just imagine, just for a second, that you are Jesus. You have the power to perform physical, emotional, and spiritual healing. What would that be like if people knew that about you? What would your life be like? I mean, everywhere Jesus went, people demanded something of him. Everywhere they went, they wanted a piece of him. But over and over again, when you read the Gospels, Jesus was busy, but he wasn't in a hurry. He refused to be in a hurry. And what you see is Jesus doing all kinds of incredible things, but he never let what he did get in the way of his love for God and his love for people. He knew the difference, which many of us do not, and hopefully we will after this sermon. He knew the difference between being busy and being hurried. He knew the difference between being busy and being hurried. See, being busy is about all the things we have to do. We're all busy. Lose that excuse when you talk to your friends and family. Everybody's busy. Being busy is about the things we have to do. Being hurried is the emotional and mental state that we're in when we do the things that we have to do. Your problem and my problem is not that we're busy. We're all busy. Our problem is that we're hurried Busyness is a crowded schedule, but hurriedness is a crowded life. Busyness is a disordered day. Hurriedness is a disordered heart. And I don't know if you've ever thought about the difference, but I was reading several years ago, this doctor, Meyer Friedman is his name. He's the one that kind of pioneered the whole type A, the personality difference, the type A. He was kind of the guy that invented that, and he's written a lot about that. And he calls what most type A people have, and I think most people in our culture, whether you're type A or not, he called it hurry sickness. Hurry sickness. I think we have it on the screen here. Hurry sickness. It's a continuous struggle to accomplish more and more things or participate in more and more events in less and less time. And you have to read it really fast to really understand it. More and more things, more and more events, less and less time. And I don't know most of you, but I have the suspicion that maybe, just maybe, a significant number of people in this room have this disease. You are sick with hurry. Friedman goes on to talk about, before we get into our text, I want to, you know, give this, it's very helpful. He says, you have this disease, hurry sickness, when clutter is a big part of your life. I can tell you a secret about almost every person in this room. I don't know most of you, but I guarantee, I don't know where you live, house, apartment, whatever, but I can tell you something personal about you. There is a room, there is a closet, there is a car, there is a drawer that is full of clutter. I almost guarantee that is true about every one of you, isn't it? You know who you are. For me, it's my car. The other day, all the kids ride in this bigger vehicle we have, but then I was taking my daughter. It was the first day of school, and we had some conflict and schedules. Imagine that with three young kids. And so I got to take my daughter to school, which is great. I love taking her to school. But she had to go in the Hyundai Sonata, which is my car. Yeah, that's how I roll, Hyundai Sonata. So I'm going to put her in the Hyundai Sonata. I open the door. Stuff falls out of the door. And my little six-year-old goes, "Dad, I don't think I can fit in there. Look at all the stuff. There's water bottles and books and clothes. Because my car is just full of clutter." I'm literally afraid there might be small animals living back there. I don't know. I'm afraid to clean it up. I just don't know what's in there. "Daddy, will I fit in there?" she said. And see, we all have places where clutter collects, don't we? A place where we put things that in our mind take too long to deal with, so we just throw it in the door, we throw it in the closet, we throw it in the back of the car. But those who are hurry sick, you constantly battle this. Another thing Friedman said is you rush daily activities. I got to admit, don't be mad at me, I'm not a big country music fan, but there's some good wisdom in country music. You need to listen. We're going to be doing Proverbs this fall, and most country music songs could qualify as contemporary Proverbs. This old country song, "I'm in a hurry to get things done. I rush and rush until life's no fun. All I really got to do is live and die, but I'm in a hurry and..." Oh yes, I don't know why. I mean, I'm not proud of this, I have received speeding tickets for no reason. I wasn't in a hurry. I eat as fast as I can. I read all the time, but I speed read. I don't have to give a book report. I'm not in school anymore like that, but I have to speed read. I don't know why. When I'm giving my kids a bath, it's a race, right? How fast can we do it? See, hurry sick people just speed up their daily activities. It's a sprint. Hurry sick people also do this wonderful thing called multitasking. Now, I know no one does that in here, right? Some of you are doing it right now. You're like listening to me. You're making the grocery list in your head. You've got your cell phone. You're kind of looking at it. You're thinking about what you got to do. We are just, it is a culture of multitasking. People who are hurry sick, though, they take it to another level. While driving their cars, they can eat, drink, monitor the radio, shave, apply makeup, talk on the cell phone, and make interesting gestures to cars around them at the same time, right? When you are hurry sick, you can do it. You think that you can simultaneously watch television, read the paper, eat dinner, check your voice messages on your cell phone, and carry on meaningful conversation, right? Hurry sick people are masters of multitasking. We even brag about it, don't we? On a serious note, hurry sick people tend to have very shallow relationships. Very shallow relationships. See, when you're constantly in a hurry, you have shallow relationships with people around you because depth in relationships take time, and hurry sick people just don't have that kind of time. And not even with their friends and their family and their coworkers much of the time. It's much easier for a hurried person to have pseudo community. So what is pseudo community? That's when you act friendly with several people, but you really never let anyone into your life. Not really anyone knows who you are. Some of you would say, well, Darren, I'm just not relational. I'm an introvert, and I understand that. But all of us in this room are human beings, right? There's no cyborgs in the house. We're all human beings, and guess what? Because you're a human being, you were built for a relationship, no matter how introverted or extroverted you are. And because hurry sick people don't find intimacy in relationships, you know what they do? They have to find intimacy. That's part of being a human being. So they find it in other places. They overlove their hobbies. I'm all for hobbies. It's good to have some kind of diversion. We're actually going to talk about that in a second. But you that are hurry sick, you love your hobby so much. You put all your effort, all your energy, all your focus. You daydream about it. You think about it at work when you should be thinking about other things. You think about it with your family when you should be. You're consumed by your hobbies. Some people overeat. That's where they find intimacy. Some people just sit in front of the television. Some people use pornography. Some people use alcohol. For me, this is how I know that I'm slipping into hurry sickness. I stop noticing the beauty around me. I really, this is, I think, a good trait for a pastor. I really like people. Aren't you glad? And my pastor, he hates everybody. I really do. This is how I know when I'm hurried. People start annoying me. You're like, well, then I am really sick because everybody annoys me all the time. No, I mean, in a way, and not just people. I love to watch people. I'll go to the mall and just watch people. People are interesting. Just watch them. They're just fascinating. They're beautiful in their own ways, right? In their own ways, they're beautiful. I just love it. But people start annoying me, and then I'm a real nature guy. When I'm in a hurry, the tree, it might as well be, you know, a building. It might as well be, you know, a flower might as well be a rake. I lose the sense of awe and wonder when I'm in a hurry. So it's not just relationships with people, it's relationship, you know, with nature and how you look at things. And when I'm hurried, there is a loss of gratitude and wonder at what God has created. But Friedman didn't say this, but this is true for me. There's a lack of self-awareness when you're hurried. I noticed this in myself. I went through a period several months where I was just frantic, out of control. I had some health issues. I wasn't sleeping at night. Didn't even notice it. Wasn't even aware that I had a problem with my schedule. Just kept going. Meanwhile, I've got some, you know, health issues. I'm not sleeping. I'm irritable. Didn't even pay attention. You know, when you're hurried, you're not really in tune with your own motives. Good question to ask yourself. How in tune are you with your motives? How in tune are you? I just want the kids to go to obey me. No, you got a problem with anger, Darren. I just wish my friends understood me. No, you're not listening to your friends. They've been telling you the truth and you're not listening. What's God's remedy for all this craziness? There's a principle in the Old Testament called the Sabbath. And I love it. And I just want to read it to you. And we're going to get into our text in just a second. Those of you who are scared that I'm not going to read the Bible, just calm down. I'm going to get there in a second. Exodus 20, verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But on the seventh day it is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall do no work, neither your son, your daughter, your manservant, or your maidservant, nor your animals, nor the stranger within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. This is a preemptive strike against hurriedness, the Sabbath. It's rooted in real life. The Sabbath is this: faith and trust that God will provide. Faith and trust that God will provide. When I rest, God still works. Sabbath is about rest for our souls and remembrance of God. It's the REM, so to speak, of the soul. Sleep studies have shown us it's not the length of sleep that matters, it's the depth. Sabbath is about depth of rest. And there's all kinds of ways. All these magazines tell you how to deal with stress in your body. You know, you do deep breaths, you jog, you work out, you get massages, you adjust your diet, all that's great. But there is no other way to deal with the tension in your soul than the Sabbath. A lot of us think rest is weakness. I grew up with a dad who's a blue-collar guy. He worked literally from sun up to sundown. In our house, you change your own oil. If the roof is messed up, you put on a new roof. If your engine's messed up, you rebuild the engine. That's the home I grew up in. And just kind of subconsciously, I just started noticing this as becoming an adult because my dad didn't really value rest as much. And I noticed, man, I think people who take naps, I think people who sleep like 6 hours a day are lazy, you know? That can't be good. And I really saw this when I was in seminary. For the first time in my life, and some of you are feeling this maybe in a life situation, the responsibilities in my life forced me to discipline myself for the first time. My wife was working full-time in an inner-city school. I was starting a youth ministry at a new church, going to seminary full-time, and then also working part-time. Things were crazy. And I noticed I started getting kind of weirded out. And I begin to pray, literally, you're going to think I'm crazy, but I begin to pray, God, if I could just have 4 hours of sleep a night, just make it, change the chemistry, change the brain, whatever you got to do. I only want to need 4 hours of sleep, then I can get everything done. I seriously prayed that for about 8 months because I thought that was the answer. For me, to sleep was weakness. And so I prayed that God would enable me to sleep less. Why do we rest? Why do we rest? Because God rested. Rest does not mean no activity, okay? There's a great verse in the Gospel of John chapter 5. Let's read this together. Jesus is talking in John chapter 5. Can we pull it up? John chapter 5. There we go. Let's read this together. John chapter 5, verse 17. My Father is all... Wait a minute. Okay. Are we all awake now? I didn't mean take a nap during the sermon, okay? So let's go back. You ready? My Father is always at work to this very day, and I too am working. So my Father's always at work to this very day. Now, I want you to think about the Sabbath thing in kind of a weird way. Imagine if somehow you were just by yourself, maybe you had some friends, maybe you had a little, company, a little manufacturing plant that built boats, I don't know, whatever you have, but you were able to build this wonderful boat that we're going to see here on the screen. And it was yours. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Just look at that water. Isn't that great? It took you 6 days to make that boat. What would you do once you made it? Would you just stare at it, like from the beach? I know it's pretty, but would you just stare at it? Would you invite your friends to go, look, I made that thing. That was me. No! What would you do with that boat if you built it? Surely if you could build a boat, you could drive one, right? Okay, so I'm making that connection. What would you do if you built this boat? You wouldn't just look at it. You wouldn't just stare at it. You wouldn't just try to impress your friends. You would get on it, right? And you would reflect on what you have made. You wouldn't just go, oh, this boat's pretty, I'm going to look at it. You would get back, you would get on this boat, you would sit back, and you would rule the water, wouldn't you? See, on the seventh day, God rested from his creation, and then he began to rule his creation. His rest was his rule. For 6 days, he had done his work, and on the Sabbath, he began ruling his work. 6 days God worked, and from day seven until now, he has been ruling his work. And friends, this is the key to understanding the rest that God has for us. The only way you truly rest is to enter into God's rest. You truly rest when you understand who rules. You truly rest when you understand that God is ruling. My Father is working up until now, Jesus said. So I can relax and trust him and follow him. You are able to relax. You are able to rest in the universe when you realize who rules the universe. And I don't mean cognitively, oh yeah, God's in charge. I mean emotionally, not just in our head, but in our heart. God is in charge. To the degree of our faith in God's rule, to that degree we experience God's rest. And we used to get this as human beings, Genesis chapter 2. I did a wedding of a couple in our church on Friday night. In every wedding, there should be Genesis chapter 2, because that's the foundation of marriage. And it says in the text, they were naked and not ashamed. Nothing between them and one another, nothing between them and God, I think is the symbolic focus of that verse. They walked with God in the cool of the day. Everything was wonderful. But then we know, Genesis chapter 3, sin entered the world. We decided to live for ourselves and be our own king. And we lost the rest. We lost the active sense of God's presence. When we decided to be our own king, we began to rule our own kingdom. We forgot who was in charge, and we lost the rest. We decided to be our own king, and we went, listen, to work. Because when you're a king, you have to maintain your kingdom. And that takes a lot of work. That takes a lot of energy when you're the king of your own kingdom. It takes mental, physical, and emotional energy. And this tells it all, friends, why human beings are not at rest. Because we're being the kings of our own kingdom, and we are absolutely thinking it all depends on us, and we're trying to maintain it ourselves. This is why women who are in our society, it's the most unfair thing I've ever seen, women are expected to be everything perfectly. Perfectly beautiful, perfectly intelligent, perfect work, perfect family. Ladies, do you feel that pressure? That's what you're expected to be because of our stupid culture. And some of you are kind of succeeding at it in some ways, but you know what? You're not at rest. Some of you guys, that's why, you know, so many men in our society overwork and they overlove their hobbies and they ignore important relationships. Because they're not doing it out of rest. And I want to say this, and I give a disclaimer first. I understand that there are chemical issues, okay, within people. Some of my friends are dealing with this. And there is a need, chemically for antidepressant medication. But those who study this issue, and some of my friends that are doctors, agree it is way overprescribed. Some people for sure need it. And I'm not making a value judgment on you, but it is way overprescribed. Why? Why are people taking meds that they shouldn't take? Why? They're not at rest. They're not experiencing the rest. And so God in his wisdom has set aside one day to remind us of the rest we have lost. One day to recapture the rest that God has for our souls. One day to pause and reflect that God is in charge. That we are not. That he is king. We're in his kingdom. That it's his party. And we're invited to it, into it. And not only are we invited into it, we're the honored guest. And this, friends, is the key to enjoying your life. It's the key to enjoying your work. It's the key to enjoying your God. Entering into that rest. Richard Foster, who is a writer of on spiritual disciplines and other things. I certainly don't agree with everything he says, but this is a great quote. He says, "I've noticed that I burn out inwardly long before I do outwardly. Hence, I must be careful not to become a frantic bundle of hollow energy, busy among people, but devoid of life. I must learn to retreat like Jesus and experience the recreating power of God." That is a great quote. And so this is my challenge to you. We're actually going to do some forums, which is times when we meet together, like on a Friday night, and we talk through some of this stuff. We're going to do one of these in the near future because this is a huge issue. But I want to challenge you once a week, figure this out. Figure it out. It may not be, for me, it can't be Sunday because I'm preaching all day. So for me, it's Friday. One day where you don't do a ton of work. You don't do any work, if possible. You may have to wean yourself to that point. But you take that day and you enjoy God and you enjoy what your hands have done to create the life that you've created for yourself. And you say, well, I'm a student and I'm going to school and I understand everybody's got excuses, but you need to figure this out. And then once a quarter, maybe you take an extended time. Sometimes, you know, if you've not been able to take the Sabbath, and I don't think it's like this binding, you know, declaration that if you blow it like in the Old Testament, you know, bad things happen. I'm not putting that on you. What I'm saying is, though, it's the rhythm of God. You got to figure it out. And if you blow your day off a couple, you know, which you will, if you mess that up, you mess up a Sabbath, which is not just a day off. It's a reflection on who God is. If you mess that up, you may need to make that up in a quarter. Once every 3 months, and you take a couple days off or 3 days off, and you get away. Once every 6 months, maybe. Once a year. We're going to talk more about this in the forum, but you need to begin to think about that in your mind and do what works for you. Maybe you can't take a full day because of your schedule, but you can take two half days back to back, a Saturday afternoon through a Sunday afternoon. I don't know what it looks like for you, but I know this, you better figure it out unless you want to be, as Richard Foster said, a hollow bundle of energy going, you know, 1,000 different places frantically. And I think the only way, friends, to learn to do it weekly is to learn to do it daily. And that's exactly what our text is talking about. Jesus was a master of it, and he models it for us. Look in Mark 6:31. Then because so many people were coming and going, they didn't have a chance to eat. You ever felt that way? He said to them what? What does he say? I confuse you on the verse. Mark 6:31. He says, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. Come with me. What Jesus is modeling for us here is the need, and I'm going to use some contemporary language here because I think it communicates to many of you. You need to learn to call a time out. I don't know if you're into sports or not, but even if you're not, I think you can understand this. The timeout is one of the most important parts of most games that are played. You see, in sports, the momentum can change so quickly, and the crowd can get so loud that if a coach does not use his timeouts wisely, the players will get caught up in the emotion of the moment and forget what the game plan is. Smart coaches use the timeout to refocus their team, right? A timeout is pretty simple. It's when you stop your activity, you regroup, and you remember what the game plan is. You stop your activity, you regroup, and you remember what the game plan is. Jesus says in this verse to the apostles who'd been doing a ton of good stuff. That's the other thing. It's not like we're doing bad stuff for the most part. We're all doing good stuff, okay? So it's not like you can go, I'm going to rob a bank or I'm going to fix dinner for my family. Those aren't the options, right? That's not the, it's all good stuff. And so you got to figure all that out. But Jesus says, even the good things, you're going out to do ministry. You're helping people. You're helping broken people. You're helping lonely people. But come away from that or you're going to be in trouble. Come away from the chaos. Come away from the crowd. Come away from the noise. And friends, just like in sports, you have to pick strategic moments where you do this. Time out. Let's say that you're driving home from your commute and all of a sudden the momentum shifts. You find yourself in the slow lane behind someone who is not putting the rush in rush hour, okay? And you're behind them. What if instead of you feeling your blood pressure coming up, instead of straining your neck and sometimes risking your life to get around this slow human, what if you just stopped and said, you know what? God is sovereign over this whole universe, and he put me in this lane behind slow guy, okay? And I'm just gonna stay behind slow guy. I'm just going to stay. What if, God forbid, you chose the slow lane to work? You left a little bit early. What would that do to your day? What would happen? We say, I'd be late. Well, that's why you got to leave a little bit earlier. What would happen if instead of, you know, the traffic report, the music, the talk radio, what if you just turned the noise off for 30 minutes, for an hour, however long you have to drive? What would that do to your soul if you just paused and turned the noise off and talked to God, or better yet, listen to God? People say all the time, well, I don't know how to pray. You know what? Your problem is there's too much noise in your life. God's speaking to you. He's inviting you in a conversation. You just can't hear it because you're so busy, because there's too much noise. What if you turn the radio off? What if instead, this is a confession for me, when I go to the grocery store, my goal is to get in there and out of there in the shortest amount of time. I even time myself at times. That's how neurotic I am about this stuff. I want to get, and you know how it is, you come in and there's nobody in line, right? You go to check out, there's 1,000 people in line. And I don't know if you're like me, but I'm scanning the lines as I'm approaching, making my choice. Okay, I remember that checker, she is way too slow. I'm not going to her. They got those automated machines, but half the time they don't read my card right. I need to get a new bank card, but I haven't done that yet. So I got to, okay, what about this guy? He's got cash. He's got a lot of stuff, but he's got cash. She doesn't have much, but she has a debit card. I'm trying to figure out, and then I'll get in this line, because, and then I'll step over because this one looks shorter. I'm sick, I understand it. But what if, I know no one is like me, this is just my problem. This is just my therapy for the week. But what if instead of doing that, you just chose the slow line? What if you just chilled out and looked at people's faces that are in the lines? What would happen? What would happen to you? Jesus was a master of calling time out and saying, you know what? I'm not going to get absorbed by all this chaos. I'm not going to let other people dictate the pace of my life. I'm going to pause. I'm going to call time out. Guys, come away. Let's get away from it. Another thing is Jesus was a master of looking for a quiet place. It's one thing to call time out, but then what do? Look in verse 32. Gets on a boat. See that? Gets on a boat to a place where there are no people. You read the Gospels time and time again. Jesus is doing this. Getting away from the pressures of life to a quiet place. Do you have a place like that? Is it a deck? Is it a room in your house? Is it a coffee shop? Let me tell you a good investment. I meant to bring them because I actually wanted to show you. This guy, one of my friends, gave me these Bose headphones, noise-reducing headphones. You heard of these things? I would never buy them for myself because they're very expensive. I think they're like $200 or $300. He gave them to me. And so I will put those things on. And they're kind of made for airplanes to cut out the noise, but you can put them on anywhere. I would wear them like when I'm preaching, if you guys wouldn't be offended. But you could put these things on and it just drowns everything out, and then you can play music. So I can be in the most public of public places, and it's like I'm by myself. It's wonderful. And that sounds kind of cheesy and weird. Well, Darren, you should go somewhere in nature. You should go somewhere really spiritual. You're a pastor. You know what? I can't always do that stuff, but I need to get away. I need to get by myself. And that is a great way for me to do that. So, you know, this isn't a product endorsement. I'm not getting any money from Bose. Figure it out, though. You get what I'm saying? Figure it out for yourself. Take some time with this. For goodness sakes, it's Labor Day weekend. What are you doing? You've got 5 barbecues back to back to back Monday, right? I mean, take some time this weekend and go, okay, God, what is it? What can I do? What can I do? Where is a quiet place for me? I dare you. I beg you. Ask God that question. God, he'll reveal it to you. It'll be shocking. For some of you, it means getting to work a little earlier so you can be at your desk before all the people who give you work and cause you problems come. For some of you, instead of dealing with the commute, it might be that you go somewhere quietly after work. Or you stay in your office or whatever. I can't let the Holy Spirit direct you in that, but figure it out. And then lastly, Jesus modeled this for us. And I know this is like cramming a bunch of stuff in, but he modeled what it meant to live from a quiet place. Let me ask you a question. Do you really want to learn how to talk to God and listen and hear him? Do you want to make sense out of the Bible? Do you want to have meaningful time with ones who love you? Do you want people to really know who you are, not just know general facts about you? Do you really want to be known? If you do, you're going to have to be still. You're going to have to get quiet. And see, God wants us to live out of that quiet, not just visit there, to live out of it. And there may be 1,000 things going on, but when you start to do Sabbath, when you start to take daily time, like we're talking about, you start taking timeouts, there's an inner quietness that develops, no matter what, that transcends and is louder, which is kind of weird, that's louder than all the noise on the outside. If you've never experienced it, I pray that you, somehow this is helpful today to get you there. Now, I visit there, but Jesus lived there. Jesus lived there. Some of us, we just need to visit to get a taste of it. Others of us, we need to start living there more. How do you do it? Well, let me just give you some practical things. Because the first century was so antithetical to our culture, there's not a lot of instruction about this practical in the Bible. There's some principles that we can extract, which we've done from the text, and you can get 1,000 more. But let me just give you a few examples. Number one, practice slowing. Choose the slow lane. Choose the long line at the grocery store. Enjoy giving your kids a bath instead of just trying to get through it. Enjoy, if you're single, the fact that you don't have somebody living in your house, or if you have a roommate, kick them out every once in a while. Practice slowing. Don't let people drive the pace of your life. You know what? You don't have to do that. Some of you, I'm just giving you permission right now. You don't have to let people drive the pace of your life. But I have a boss, and I have a teacher, and I have a professor, and I understand that. But you also have free time. And some of you are in hard situations. I'm not belittling that. And I've been there where you're going to school and you're working. And you're trying to. I understand that. But you still, you have some time. You have some time. Practice slowing. And a great way to do it is when you do errands. Pray over your schedule. I started doing this. And you know what started happening? I started praying over my schedule and I started cutting things out. Because I started looking at it and asking, I don't need to be doing that. I don't need to meet with that person. I don't need to speak at that event. I don't need to do that. What if you really surrendered your schedule and your calendar to God? Have you ever done that? What if you did that? What would happen? I have a feeling that we'd be doing a lot less stuff. We're doing a lot of stuff to try to keep other people happy, to try to make ourselves feel important. If we would just surrender that and begin to pray, God, I give you my schedule, I give you my calendar, I give you my Palm Pilot. Take 5-minute breaks during the day. Just 5 minutes. You know, put your Bose headphones on. Whatever you got. 5 minutes. Serenity now. You're just looking for peace. God, I just need 5 minutes. Go to your car if you're at work. You know? Stay in the bathroom a few minutes longer. I don't know. Figure it out. You know what I'm saying? Figure this out. Turn the radio off. We talked about that. Reduce your television watching. Try it by a third, see what happens. And instead of having noise on, just sit there with your journal, sit there with your Bible. Just build some margin. There's this great story, I'll close with this, about Mary and Martha. Martha was this busy gal. Jesus, and if you had Jesus coming over your house, you'd probably want it pretty clean, probably want the meal to be good, right? Some nice hors d'oeuvres, whatever they did back then. So she is crazy fretting around, trying to figure everything out. Mary, her sister, is just sitting there with Jesus, listening to him. And you read the story, and Mary looks lazy. Mary's just sitting there. Martha gets mad about it. By the way, all the busy people in your life, when you start doing that, are going to criticize you. They're going to call you lazy. They're going to call you impractical. What are you doing? There's work to do. Martha's like, what are you doing, Mary? Get up, get busy. And Jesus says, Mary, you're doing good. Martha, listen. You're worried about so many things. Mary's got the right priority. She's doing the right thing right now. She's listening to me. She'll get busy, don't worry. But she's listening to me right now. See, we're like Martha, and we're busy because when we're busy, we feel important. Oh, I'm just so busy, and I'm so frantic, and I'm so important. We don't ever say that, but that's what we're doing. We feel important when we're busy. We feel useful. We get our identity from our activity, and so we feel good because we're busy, because then we can tell people when they ask us, hey, I'm really busy. Look deep in your heart on this one. Ask God to show you. I'm telling you, this is the issue for me. When I'm busy, I am somebody. When I'm lazy, I have to deal with the emptiness and the loneliness, and I have to deal with God. But when I'm busy, I can kind of ignore God. And when I'm busy, I can kind of stay shallow with people. When I'm busy, I don't really have to deal with my motives. But when I slow down and I'm quiet, you know, all the stuff that's in my heart comes out. I start to have to listen to my wife instead of just waiting for her to be done so I can speak. Just amazing things start happening. See, God's not impressed. This is what you need to know. God is not impressed with our crazy, disordered lives. Number one, it's killing our zest for living. Some of you are absolutely, you hate your life because you fill it up with stuff, good stuff, good stuff, good stuff, good stuff. Just too much good stuff. But more important than even that, and that's important, it hinders us hearing his still, small voice. God will not let you rush him. He will not be hurried. And some of you feel so distant and you feel so disconnected from God. Why? Because you are so busy, you're not hearing what he's saying to you. Later on in the text, it says that Jesus had compassion. He was sick of people, really, literally. He had to get away. They were draining. He knew he needed to get away. He needed to pull the disciples out. They went away, but where did he go? Right back. Right back to people. and he had compassion on them. Some of you, it is imperative. See, you're going to lose your zest for living if you're too hurried. You are going to hinder your relationship with God, but you're also going to be, you're going to miss out on being used by God in the lives of other people if you're too hurried. And there is nothing, that's what makes all the mundane, boring events of our lives worth it. I mean, connecting with God for sure, but when you know that God is using you in somebody else's life, when you're listening to people instead of just waiting to speak, God is going to start using you in people's lives all over the place, where you work, where you go to school, where you live. That's when you know, wait a minute, wow, God is at work. God is in control. Look, he just used me in this person's life. I'm a mess, and he used me, even me. Are you at rest today? Not, did you sleep well, or can you take a good break? Can you take a nap? Are you really at rest? Are you experiencing the rest of God? Let's wrestle with that question as we pray. Oh, Lord, it's Labor Day weekend. And I pray for my friends and myself. God, in this crazy world that we live in this culture that values activity over depth, that encourages, endorses, and rewards hurriedness. There's nothing more countercultural than what we talked about today, God. So I pray that we would follow Christ into the lonely places, that we would hear his voice saying, come away. Lord, we didn't give a lot of practical details about Sabbath, and I didn't really want to, God, because I think, God, if we will wrestle with the concept in the Ten Commandments, in Exodus, if we'll look at Jesus, God, I think those of us who would be that brave, who would be that courage this morning, maybe for the first time to really surrender our schedule, if we would be that God, you will teach us through the Holy Spirit. I need you to teach me, Lord. I need to know how to retreat, how to rest, how to recreate. We need you this morning to show up in a big way and to speak deep in our hearts and give us practical things that we can do to slow down our crazy lives.